YouTube.com/VOA1 The Hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners. So we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Dan Novak and Brian Lynn. Later, Steve Ember will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, here is Dan Novak.
9 Hong Kong activists were jailed Wednesday for taking part in a ceremony honoring the 1989 Tiananmen Square protests. The pro-democracy activists are facing up to 10 months in jail. The 9 are part of a group of 12 defendants who pleaded guilty earlier this month for participating in the ceremony. 3 others were given suspended sentences. The ceremony had traditionally been held every year to honor the June 4, 1989 student-led pro-democracy protests in Beijing's Tiananmen Square. The students called for an end to official corruption, political reforms, and a more democratic society. The government's response turned violent, and many demonstrators died. All 9 activists were charged with taking part in an illegal gathering. 7 of them are facing an additional charge of persuading others to take part in the event. Police last year banned the annual ceremony for the first time in 30 years. Police said the ban was needed for public health reasons related to COVID-19. But critics say the ban is part of ongoing measures to stop political dissent. In 2019, there were months of anti-government protests in Hong Kong, which is a partly independent Chinese territory. More than 12 activists first attended the June 4th ceremony, despite the ban, and thousands came later. The crowds broke through barriers set up around Victoria Park to light candles and sing songs. Police later arrested over 20 activists, including leaders of the Hong Kong Alliance in support of patriotic democratic movements of China. That is the group that organizes the yearly ceremony. Among those sentenced Wednesday were lawyer Albert Ho and Figo Chan, former leader of the Civil Human Rights Front. They were already serving jail sentences over other illegal gatherings. 8 others pleaded not guilty and will stand trial in November. Jimmy Lai, the founder of the closed Apple Daily newspaper, as well as Alliance leader Lee Chuck Yan, are among those who face trial. The 2019 protests led Beijing to approve a national security law in Hong Kong last year. Under the law, anyone believed to be involved in terrorism or the weakening of state power could be tried and face life in prison. The government has arrested more than 100 people under the law. Beijing and Hong Kong officials have been criticized for restricting freedoms promised to Hong Kong when the former British colony was handed over to China in 1997. I'm Dan Novak.
Vietnam is speeding up its COVID-19 vaccination program. The country's government hopes the effort will permit officials to loosen coronavirus restrictions in major cities by the end of the month. More than 1 million vaccine shots were given over the weekend in Hanoi. The capital city has been under a lockdown since July. About 5.5 million injections have been given in the country since vaccinations began in March, the health ministry said. Hanoi's mayor, Chu Ngoc An, said Sunday, "We have to speed up the vaccination program so we can make a plan to reopen the city." More than half of Vietnam's 98 million people are under lockdown. About 80% of the 5.7 million adults in Hanoi have received at least one shot. Officials aim to have 100% of the adult population at least partly vaccinated by the end of this week. However, the country's overall vaccination rate remains low, at about 28%. Only 4% of the population has been fully vaccinated with both shots. Vietnam was able to keep its infection rate generally low until April of this year. At that time, it had only 35 reported deaths from the virus. And last year, it was praised for keeping the virus under control. But the Delta variant of the virus has infected over 600,000 people and killed more than 15,000 in just 4 months. Vaccine shortages forced Vietnam to slow down its vaccination program. Ho Chi Minh City, the nation's business center, is the most hard-hit area. Over 95% of adults there have received their first COVID-19 vaccine. But many people who need to come in for a second shot are not able to get it because of low supplies. To help deal with the shortage, the country's health officials have permitted combinations of different two-dose COVID-19 vaccines. Experts say this method is likely safe and effective, but researchers are still gathering data to be sure. Vietnam is currently using AstraZeneca, Pfizer, Moderna, and Sinopharm, a Chinese-made vaccine.
An Israeli military contractor has built an armed, unmanned robot designed to be deployed in many battle situations. The vehicle is called Rex MK2. It was developed by state-owned contractor Israel Aerospace Industries, also known as IAI. The robot is semi-autonomous, with the ability to perform some operations on its own. It can also be guided by humans remotely through an electronic controller. Officials from IAI said the vehicle was built to support Israeli military ground forces in different levels of fighting. It can carry equipment and supplies, gather intelligence, and open fire at nearby targets. The robot can carry 2 machine guns and a series of cameras and sensors to support military activities. It was also designed with the ability to transport injured soldiers. Rani Avni helps lead the development of autonomous systems for IAI. He told the Associated Press The Rex MK2 is the most advanced in a series of unmanned vehicles developed for the Israeli military over the past 15 years. Israel's military is currently using a similar but smaller vehicle called the Jaguar. The Jaguar is used to guard Israel's border with the Gaza Strip. The Islamic militant group Hamas took control of Gaza from the Palestinian Authority in 2007. As a result, Israel closed off its border with Gaza and enforces a blockade. Gaza is home to 2 million Palestinians who face the blockade, which is supported by Egypt. Protests take place there, and Palestinian militants and laborers try to cross over into Israel. The Israeli Army's website states that the semi-autonomous Jaguar was designed to reduce danger to soldiers working along the Gaza-Israel border. The Jaguar also carries a machine gun and is one of many technology tools used by the Israeli military. The Army also has used drones with guided missiles in operations against Hamas forces. Unmanned ground vehicles are increasingly being used by other armies. Countries include the United States, Britain, and Russia. They are designed for things like providing operational support, removing landmines, and firing weapons. The military contractor says the new Rex MK2 can complete many actions on its own, such as controlling movements and carrying out surveillance. Actions such as firing a weapon require a human to operate the electronic controller. Critics have raised concerns that robotic weapons could decide on their own, possibly mistakenly, to shoot at targets. The company said that while the new robotic vehicle was developed with that ability, the current version being offered does not have it. It is possible to make the weapon itself also autonomous. However, it is a decision of the user today, developer Rani Avni said. The maturity of the system or the user is not there yet, he added. Yanni Gedge is an operational expert in IAI's robotics division. He said the robot is built to become smarter over time. With every mission, the device collects more data, which it then learns from for future missions, he told the AP. Bonnie Docherty is a researcher with the Arms Division of Human Rights Watch. She said such weapons can be dangerous because they cannot be trusted to recognize soldiers from civilians. The robots are also not equipped to make the right decisions about the harm attacks could cause to civilians. Machines cannot understand the value of human life, Docherty said. This undermines human dignity and violates human rights laws, she added. In a 2012 report, Docherty called for fully automated weapons to be banned by international law. I'm Brian Lynn. Thank you.
VOA Learning English. Welcome to the Making of a Nation. I'm Steve Ember. We continue the story of the presidency of Andrew Jackson. Jackson took office in 1829. He was popular with many voters. They saw him as the symbol of the common man. But Jackson's first term seemed to be mostly a political battle with his vice president, John C. Calhoun. As his presidency went on, another struggle began. This time, it was Jackson against the Bank of the United States. The first Bank of the United States had closed in 1811. But without a central bank, the country's finances had suffered during the War of 1812. So in 1816, Congress provided money to establish the Second Bank of the United States. The bank could provide loans, pay bills, collect taxes, and move money around the country. Congress gave the bank a charter to do business for 20 years. The government owned one-fifth of the bank. A small group of private citizens owned the rest. Lawmakers gave the bank enormous power. The Bank of the United States had $35 million in capital. Some of that money came from the government. Most came from investors. Historian Bray Hammond notes that at the time, the Bank of the United States was the richest corporation in the world. The Bank of the United States also printed the country's paper money, and it was the only bank permitted to have offices across the nation. By making it easy or difficult for businesses to borrow money, the bank's owners could control the economy in almost any part of the United States.
What this means is that you are granting, and Congress did grant, exclusive privileges to the Bank of the United States, which meant exclusive money-making opportunities to its stockholders.
Historian Daniel Feller explains that the Bank of the United States helped the government to do its business effectively and efficiently. But it also helped the people who owned stock in the bank. During Jackson's presidency, a man named Nicholas Biddle led the Bank of the United States. Biddle was an extremely intelligent man. He had completed his studies at the University of Pennsylvania when he was only 13 years old. When he was 18, he was sent to Paris as secretary to the American minister. During America's war with Britain in 1812, Biddle helped establish the Bank of the United States. He became its president when he was only 37 years old. Biddle clearly understood his power as president of the Bank of the United States. In his mind, the government had no right to interfere in any way with the bank's business. President Jackson did not agree, nor was he very friendly toward the bank. Not many people from Western states were. They did not trust the bank's paper money. They wanted to deal in gold and silver. Jackson criticized the bank in each of his yearly messages to Congress. He said the Bank of the United States was dangerous to the liberty of the people. He said the bank could build up or pull down political parties through loans to politicians. Jackson opposed giving the bank a new charter. He proposed that a new bank be formed as part of the Treasury Department. The president urged Congress to consider the future of the bank long before the bank's charter was to end in 1836. Then, if the charter was rejected, the bank could close its business slowly over several years. Changing the banking system slowly, Jackson said, would prevent serious economic problems for the country. But the bank's president wanted to renew the charter early. He made the request in January 1832, 9 months before the next presidential election. Jackson's opponent, Senator Henry Clay of Kentucky, was sure that the issue of the bank could win him some votes. Clay argued his case on the floor of the Senate for 3 days. He strongly urged the Senate to renew the bank's charter. He said the country was in the middle of a revolution, not yet a bloody revolution, but things were happening that pointed to a total change of the pure Republican character of the government. Power was being centered in the hands of one man, he said. He meant President Jackson. Clay added that if Congress did not act, the government would fail. Clay then asked the Senate to condemn Jackson, saying he violated the Constitution and the nation's laws. The Senate approved the resolution. The chief opponent to the bank was Senator Thomas Hart Benton of Missouri. He objected to the renewal of the charter, he told the Senate, because the bank was too great and powerful and made the rich richer and the poor poorer. The Senate finally voted on the bank's new charter. The vote was 28 for renewal and 20 against. The House voted 3 weeks later. It also approved the charter, 107-85. The lawmakers sent the bill to the White House. President Jackson debated it with members of his cabinet. Some wanted to negotiate a compromise, but Jackson decided to veto the bill in the strongest possible language. On July 10, 1832, Jackson sent a message to Congress explaining his reasoning. Jackson said he did not believe the bank's charter was constitutional. Jackson also spoke of the way the bank moved money from west to east. He said the bank was owned by a small group of rich men, mostly in the east. Some of the owners, he said, were foreigners. Much of the bank's business was done in the west. The money paid by Westerners for loans went into the pockets of the Eastern bankers. Jackson said this was wrong. Then the president spoke of his firm belief in the rights of the common man. It is to be regretted, he said, that the rich and powerful bend the acts of the government to their own purposes. Jackson said that instead, the government should shower its favors, as heaven does its rain, on the high and low alike, on the rich and the poor equally. Jackson's veto of the bank bill may have cost him votes among the wealthy, but it earned him votes among the common people, like farmers and laborers. He easily won re-election in November of 1832. Martin Van Buren became his vice president. Historian Daniel Feller says Jackson believed his victory meant that Americans supported his policies including the bank veto.
He had a very popular personal image. It's possible he would have been reelected by the same margin or larger anyway. The one thing we can say looking forward is that when later on you had somebody carrying on Jackson's policies absolutely faithfully without Jackson's personal charisma, he proved to be not nearly so popular.
In his second term, Jackson stopped putting federal money into the Bank of the United States. Instead, he put the money into state banks. The bank president, Nicholas Biddle, fought with all his power to keep the bank open. He demanded that borrowers immediately repay their loans. Businesses struggled without the bank's assistance. Workers lost their jobs. Biddle blamed President Jackson for the financial panic. Critics of Jackson's bank policy called him King Andrew the First. But as time passed, business people began to see that the Bank of the United States was being much tighter in its money policy than was necessary. They began to feel that it was the bank's president, not Jackson, who was responsible for the serious economic situation in the country. Biddle took no responsibility for the financial crisis. He then made a very bad decision. Biddle asked the governor of Pennsylvania to make a speech supporting the bank. At the same time, Biddle refused to lend the state of Pennsylvania $300,000. The governor was furious. Instead of making a speech supporting the bank, he made one that sharply criticized it. 2 days later, the governor of New York proposed that the state sell $4 or $5 million of stock for loans to help state banks. The New York legislature approved selling even more. Strengthening state banks helped break the power of the Bank of the United States. Nicholas Biddle began to see that the battle was lost. He started making more loans to businesses. The economic panic slowly ended. Jackson's victory over the Bank of the United States was clear. Biddle started to lose the support of many members of Congress. In the House of Representatives, James Polk proposed 4 resolutions about the bank. One said the bank should not get a new charter in 1836. The second resolution said government money should not be deposited in the bank. The third said the government should continue to put its money in state banks. And the fourth proposed an investigation of the bank and the reasons for the economic panic in the country. All 4 of these anti-bank resolutions were approved. One of Biddle's aides described the feelings of bank officials. "This day," he said, "should be ripped from the history of the Republic." He said, "The President of the United States had seized the public treasury, and the representatives of the people had approved it." Jackson won what he himself considered a glorious triumph. I'm Steve Ember, inviting you to join us next time for The Making of a Nation, American History from VOA Learning English.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.